Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Tuesday to all of you. Nice to be with you on a gorgeous Tuesday. Nice little December chill in the air. Holidays are here. And we are here. Sean Pendergast and Seth Payne with you on a Tuesday.
How far are we from Fat Tuesday? It's usually in February.
Why, did you want to circle it on your calendar?
Yeah.
I don't know. Probably it usually happens, I want to say, sometime like between Valentine's Day and the end of the month in February.
I might go Catholic this year just so I can really truly enjoy Mardi Gras.
It is the beginning of Lent. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's the whole theory behind Mardi Gras, right? That you're going to
get in all your vices before Lent starts.
I feel like somehow that's not quite how the Bible had it planned.
No, I don't think so.
I feel that's the way human genetics have it planned.
That's how it's evolved.
That's something. Yeah. Oh, wait, I'm about to have to give something up. Well, right. Let's party like it's 1999.
Well, text in 713-572-4610 for Seth's benefit. When is Mardi Gras this year?
And how quickly can I become a Catholic? How long would it? Is there like an immersion school like there are for languages, dude, where I can go somewhere for a month and learn how to, like, an accelerated course of study?
No, you know how I know this? Because I at least sniffed around the process to get my previous marriage annulled. Uh-huh. You know, I'm getting married in February, probably right sometime right around Mardi Gras.
You're not officially good with the church yet.
We're not getting married in the church.
I know, but yeah, so you got divorced, but you didn't get it officially annulled.
No, God still got my receipts over there. I still got to go hash some things out, probably. Bring my attorney in and talk to God, yes.
I think you got to go back to the old days when you could just buy your way out of stuff like that.
I think that still exists. I just don't have the money to do it. That's the problem. My guess is that possibility is still out there. I'm a schlub who doesn't have the kind of money to, you know, build the Pendergast holy water holder or anything like that.
Name
something at the church. So I started to go through the process and then immediately found out that it's basically like I would get a law degree faster than I'd get my marriage annulled in the Catholic Church.
Okay.
I'm exaggerating a little bit, but it was like over a year.
But you're thinking that for me to go through and take the classes and everything, would I get to take like my first communion and stuff?
I think so.
I
think you would need to. Yeah,
oh, we could. Pretty cool.
And we could do it in the Verizon Artist Lounge.
Me and a bunch of 10-year-olds. That'd be like that episode
Kramer.
Of Seinfeld.
Kramer's
in the karate class.
The karate class. Yeah, that would be pretty cool. So, it would take a while for you, Seth, just so you know. My advice to you would be just go through whatever your normal Mardi Gras process has been year to year.
Okay.
You know, involving a lot of the king cake and the jambalaya.
Yeah.
Several vats of alcohol.
There's
a little bit of that.
A little bit of that going on.
Yeah.
Sorry, I've derailed us already.
That's
at 6:03 in the morning.
Good. It's 6:03. Yeah. How you doing today, my friend?
I'm good. I enjoyed watching the first quarter of Monday Night Football last night. Before I passed out. So I got I actually got 8 hours of sleep on a Monday night,
That's
which is
solid.
Rare for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I woke up this morning and watched the rest of the game. And look, I think that when I watch Russell Wilson play, I can't help but think of Deshaun Watson for obvious reasons in so many different ways. You have this electrically athletic quarterback. And with Russell Wilson, over the course of his several years, he's become a much, much more just adept NFL passer of the football. He's more than just a core. He's a passer of the football. Yeah. The biggest thing that I noticed with Russell Wilson, where I keep thinking of Deshaun Watson, is Russell Wilson has always been a guy that'll flee the pocket. And for him, he has to because he's so short at times.
Yeah.
There's times where he just can't see, so he's going to flee the pocket. But I think when he stays in the pocket, he's developed a pocket presence a little bit more, a pocket savvy that Deshaun Watson still doesn't have. Because immediately I watched a play last night and it made me think of the play where Deshaun spun out of trouble. I think it was in the first quarter. Looked like he was going to get sacked and he did the classic Deshaun Watson thing. that play, Deshaun had drifted to the right a little bit. Mm-hmm. If he had stepped up, if he had stayed more in the pocket, I think he could have avoided trouble and just stayed in the pocket. That's just one of these little piddly details that's kind of a big thing that I think he's going to work his way out. It's just there's still room for improvement with Deshaun. No matter how great he is in certain aspects, he's still a young quarterback.
Yeah, I think to me the commonality between those two is that they're both so good that the floor for a team that has Russell Wilson at quarterback, the same way I feel like the floor for a team that has Deshaun Watson at quarterback, is like 8-8 or 9-7. Like as long as either of those guys is your quarterback, everything else can be crumbling around you. You know, assuming that the roster is at least, you know, sort of replacement level around you. Fortunately for both of those guys, they've got some talent around them too. They're both going to be double digit win team. Seattle is a double digit win team now. They're 10-2. I think the floor for either of those guys, for a team, the worst a Russell Wilson or Deshaun Watson quarterback team is going to be is 8-8 or 9-7. I think they're both that good.
I like playing the quarterback swap game. And where you say, okay, how would this quarterback, because like lately I've been thinking about what would the 49ers be like with Kirk Cousins as their quarterback, and what would the Vikings be like with Jimmy Garoppolo as their quarterback?
What'd you come up with?
I think I actually like a San Francisco Kirk Cousins team better than I like a Minnesota Jimmy Garoppolo team.
They both run the Kubiak style.
Right. I think that Cousins is just a more efficient quarterback. I think that Garoppolo is obviously more physically talented in a lot of ways. I just don't.
It's careless.
I don't trust Garoppolo. Yeah. Exactly. He's careless.
Yeah.
And I almost would opt for Kirk Cousins' boring, normal, like boring, almost too careful approach. Mm-hmm. And even though he lost last night and he's now 0-8 on Monday Night Football, which is kind of a freaky stat. Nobody had ever been 0-7 on Monday Night Football.
And is he 0-8 now? I didn't see that stat.
0-8 on Monday Night Football. Remember, he had the primetime win a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. Trust me, as a gambler, I know that Kirk Cousins in primetime is an ATM machine.
Like, yeah.
I know that. I just didn't realize it was that bad. I hadn't seen that number.
I didn't bet
on the game last night, so that's, you know, I'm not as dialed into that number.
Yeah, and when I say that, it's not like I'm saying, yeah, because Kirk Cousins is so awesome, that's why they'd be better in San Francisco. Right. I think he would just run the plan better.
Yeah.
I think he runs the plan better. In Minnesota, last night, it almost felt a little too much Mike Zimmer influenced, even though Kubiak and Stefanski are running the show offensively. Yeah. You're wondering, you're sitting there and you're watching Kirk Cousins and you're thinking, all right, is Kirk Cousins not playing as well as he could because the game plan is too conservative, or is the game plan conservative because Kirk Cousins can't be trusted?
He's your quarterback, yeah.
Because Cook gets injured, and all of a sudden Cousins starts getting aggressive, throwing it downfield,
yep.
And they come right back. So I don't know, and I think I feel like the Vikings are still feeling their way through. I think if Cousins had a few years in a system like he will here in Minnesota, I think you'll see a different version of him.
Yeah, it's the other thing I was thinking watching that game and watching the highlights on our TV here in studio this morning as we kicked off on a Tuesday here on Payne and Pendergast Sports Radio 610 is, boy, the NFC is really good. Those are the two wild card teams coming into the game last night.
Right.
Minnesota and Seattle both going into last night, at least on the outside looking in. I think now that Seattle won, I believe that they are... I got to look at the playoff standings on ESPN. Is Seattle now was that a big enough swing for them where they're now the 2 seed instead of like the 5 or the 6 seed in the NFC? I'll have to take a look.
Seahawks are tied with the 49ers at 10-2.
Yep. The playoff standings in the NFC. Yeah, Seattle's the 2 seed. So they've got the tiebreaker. They must have beat Seattle. They must have beat San Francisco head to head earlier this year.
Yep, they did.
So they're the 2 seed.
That was because the 49ers have only lost to the Seahawks and
the Ravens this weekend. That's right. So the two wild card teams in the NFC are the San Francisco 49ers at 10-2. And the Minnesota Vikings at 8-4. And you sit here and go, boy, wow, look at that. The line that is drawn in the NFC, it's really, really top heavy. The thing that gets lost sometimes is this stuff can all swing in a week or two. You know what I mean? Like, the Buffalo Bills are 9-3. That's only a game less than Seattle, who's the 5 seed in the NFC. The Steelers are 7-5. The Titans are 7-5. I don't know who Minnesota plays this weekend, but they're one loss away from being 8-5 next weekend. So the optics of it right now are that the NFC is significantly better than the AFC, but these things tend to balance out by the end of the year.
They balance out. I don't know. You tell me those wild card teams in the NFC, and I feel like, yeah, those are damn solid good teams.
Yeah.
Where you talk about the second wild card teams
That's
in the
true.
AFC, and it's It's wait a
Devlin
second.
Hodges.
This duck character is the quarterback for one of them. The Titans might definitely be for real, but we are saying the same thing about the Raiders 2 weeks ago. You talk about things swinging quickly.
Yep.
2 weeks ago, going into 2 weeks ago, you're saying, wow, you know what? That Raiders win by the Texans is looking better and better all the time.
Yeah.
Now I could care less. I couldn't care less that the Texans beat the Raiders. They look like trash.
Yeah.
They're very versus the Titans. Right this moment, I'm pretty damn impressed by the Titans, especially because they've got a running back that's just an absolute hoss. Have you seen these stats for Derrick Henry over the last 16 games?
What are they?
Yeah, they're pretty good. They're
I don't mean exactly.
No. Like, I realized as soon as I was saying it, like, I don't have these stats to give.
No, but I mean the gist of them. Like, he's 16 games is the equivalent of a full season.
He's first in the league in a lot of categories over these last 16 games. He's just, and then he's a guy that surges in the second half of the season. And Ryan Tannehill looks to have found his fit. Ryan Tannehill found his home for at least, I would say, the next 2 years. Yeah. I think that I would imagine the Titans are going to use him. But I just don't know. Hopefully, the Texans will be a part of making the Titans look like we now look at the Raiders.
Yeah.
Like, oh, wow, they might really be gelling into something. And then all of a sudden, no, they suck.
For what it's worth, I do think the Texans match up pretty well with the Titans. Even with Derrick Henry running the way he is, this Texans defense matches up pretty well with teams who are built around running the football in a conventional fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Between the tackles kind of stuff. As explosive as Derrick Henry is, he needs to get into second or third gear before he does that. You know, he's not a guy who... He's not a slasher who gets through the hole. Like, if there's an opening, then he turns into a diesel truck at the second level, and you can't catch him. But I feel stylistically the Texans match up pretty well with the Titans.
I'll say this again. This is where I'm gratefully proven wrong, I think, about the Texans defense, where the last few years I've worried that the Texans defense hasn't modernized enough because they were built so heavy up front. Like, they were built to stop the 2000 Ravens or something, where you look at it now and I think, oh, wait, that actually helps out a lot, because a lot of these offenses have said, wow, defenses are built to stop the pass. We're just going to run it right down your throat.
Mm-hmm.
So the Texans are actually built to stop that now. DJ Reader's been playing extremely well, and I'm with you. I think they match up really well versus them. By the way, speaking of DJ Reader, I listened to John McClain yesterday, and then I saw in his article yesterday, he said that if DJ Reader doesn't make the Pro Bowl, somebody should launch an investigation. I respectfully disagree with John McClain just because, not because DJ Reader isn't playing really well, but because the types of defensive tackles that make the Pro Bowls are guys that are more pass rusher than run stuffers.
For sure.
That's just, that, now Ted Washington might be the last true run stuffer that's made the Pro Bowl. There's a few guys here and there, but look, DJ's more run stuffer than pass rusher. He had four quarterback hits in the game the other night. I'd be surprised. I'd be really excited if he made the Pro Bowl, because that might be a shift in like how they vote on these things. But it's just he's not quite the same type of player that usually makes.
Here's why I don't want him to make the Pro Bowl. Yeah. It'll price the Texans out of where they can re-sign DJ Reader.
Oh, some owner will get a bug up his head.
Yeah. No, I think the league is already hip to DJ Reader.
Yeah.
I think DJ Reader is going to be a very wealthy man after this season, whether it's a paycheck from the Texans or whether it's a paycheck from some other NFL team. I don't know if the Texans made him an offer like they do with a lot of guys, like they did with Nick Martin, same draft class. With a lot of that's the Texans' MO, with a year left on the deal, nobody else can negotiate with these guys, so they come to him with a deal to try to extend him, which is smart business.
Yeah.
I don't know if they, I'd be shocked if they didn't make an offer to DJ Reader for that type of thing. If they did, he did a very wise thing by rejecting it and playing out his contract, because to your point, he has been dynamic. For what he is, he has been dynamic this year.
The other thing, because what will usually happen is for a run stuffer, I don't like calling him a run stuffer. He's not like Tony Siragusa.
Right.
He's way more athletic and versatile.
Very athletic,
than he's more Sam Adams than Tony Siragusa.
Mm.
But he's not quite Vince Wilfork yet. You know,
right.
Vince Wilfork in his prime was like pushed the pocket like nobody else.
Yeah.
He was as good a he didn't get a ton of sacks, but he was a very effective interior pass rusher. And to get to that point, to make the Pro Bowl as that type of a guy, let's say Vince Wilfork DJ Reader is a Vince Wilfork type, usually have to be on a really good defense.
Yeah.
So that's another part of it, is they need to have a real surge here in these last few games.
That's a good point. All right, many folks have said the Patriots win on Sunday was the best win of the Bill O'Brien era. Why it might not even be the most impressive win this season, we'll discuss next. Payne and Pendergast with you, Sports Radio 610. Before we get into this topic, one last ad on Monday Night Football, Seth.
Yes.
Do you find Russell Wilson More likable, less likable, or the same amount of likable when he's mic'd up?
I actually wrote this down. There was one phrase. Oh, it was at the beginning. It was in there in the opening huddle. And he's talking to his team, and he says something about an unwavering belief. Okay. And I'm like, dude, are you reading this?
Yes,
you
have
this
he on probably your cheat is. Sheet? Yes.
Unwavering belief. Yes. All right, thanks, Churchill. Yes. What the hell? He's just so, you know who he is? He's Al Gore. He's Al, like, when he talks, it's kind of like, all right, the substance of what you're saying is good, but I'm not feeling the emotion. Yeah. You're very wooden. He's very wooden. And that's why I think that it hurts his electability.
You know what?
He also, with that haircut, he also looks like a Fraggle. And I don't, and I can't respect a Fraggle.
You know what doesn't do him any favors? His social media. Because his whole thing with Sierra on social media is very, it's very cheesy and unlikable, I think. To me, it is, at least. I don't know. Maybe this is yet another brick that I'm piling onto the wall of Sean is getting old, but like I don't find him to be tremendously likable on his social media. The funny thing about Russell Wilson, I was at the Super Bowl in New Orleans back in 2012 on Radio Row when I was with my old station, and Russell Wilson had no PR person back then. That was his rookie year, and Russell Wilson, back then, John Granato and I did a local morning show, and then we did a few hours that were on the network that was owned over there. Well, Russell Wilson, and we had two different people running our Super Bowl week, one running the local and one running the national in terms of booking guests for us. And Russell Wilson, unbeknownst to us, got booked for each chunk. He got booked with us at like 6:30 in the morning on the local thing, and then at 9:15 or whatever, he shows up again like, hey guys, how you doing? Like that's how maybe just sort of unsavvy he was from a PR standpoint. He had nobody really running his stuff. I think he was kind of self-booking.
Yeah.
And people were walking, understandably, he had people walking up to him. He had a great rookie year. Like, hey, do you want to come on with us? And, sure, okay. And so he came on with us like two times within like 3 hours of each other and was the nicest guy in the world. And you watch him, you go, this guy's an NFL quarterback and he's not walking around with a 3 or 4 person entourage. Well, sure enough, a year later, there's this massive article on SI.com about the entourage in this group, like Team Russ, that he built around him to book this and book that, which is probably smart instead of just sort of randomly wandering around Radio Row just doing interviews. But I found him more endearing when he was doing that. Now he feels very contrived.
Right. Well, if contrived, and I don't know, there's just something about his personality, and this is what all the various reports and sources have said in Seattle. That's the Legion of Boom, especially. Those guys on defense were
not vibing.
They did not vibe with Russell Wilson. Yeah. There's just something about him. I think the British call it a Clockwork Orange. That's where the movie came from, a Clockwork Orange, where it's like everything looks nice on the exterior, but on the inside it's all mechanical.
Yeah.
That's what you get with Russell Wilson. You don't ever feel like you're talking or listening to an actual human being. Like it feels very, you know what? If somebody were to play him in a movie, it would be Guy Pearce. Guy Pearce is like that kind of like perfect haircut.
Yes.
Not really sure about like Guy Pearce in Hollywood Confidential.
Yeah.
Was it Hollywood Confidential?
Not sure.
Yeah, the one, but anyway, just like kind of buttoned up, does everything right, but you just can't love him.
Yeah. Well, and even like last night where he's walking up to Chris Carson.
Yeah.
And he's addressing everybody by their number. Hey, 3-2. Hey, 2-0. Hey, 9-0. Hey, 6-5. Like, oh, this is 7-6. Hey, 3-2. This is the time, like this is late in the game, he walks up to him, hey 3-2, this is the time where great players, like you're a great player, this is where you close out things.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, all right, I get it, it's the pep talk, it's just the delivery of it.
Yeah, I don't, you know what I need is just don't mic him up again. I want to just enjoy Russell Wilson for being the football player he is. I don't want to be constantly reminded that I probably wouldn't like hanging out with him.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, he's a hell of a quarterback, man. Yeah. He's really, really good. So Bill O'Brien met with the media yesterday, and understandably, everybody wanted to talk about the win over the Patriots. Understandably, Bill O'Brien wanted to steer things towards moving forward to the final month of the season.
The Patriots, they're the champions, right? I mean, they're the standard. They've done so many great things over the last 20 years. So I think anytime you have a chance to beat them and you go ahead and you win the game, I think that's a good win. I mean, I'm not trying to diminish the win, but I think there's a lot of football left, man. You know, I mean, that's the thing, you know, and I think we've got to turn the page and we've got to move to Denver here pretty quickly when they get back here on Wednesday. We've got to get going on Denver. Denver won last week. I would say that, that was a good win, but there's a lot of football left.
I'm guessing of all the games, Seth, of all the wins that Bill O'Brien has had, especially recently where this team is being discussed on a different tier than previous O'Brien teams have been discussed, secretly, silently, inside, this one was probably the one that had the biggest disparity between how he actually felt about the win and how he actually had to say he feels about the win in the press conferences, in the Mondays and Tuesdays and Wednesdays afterwards. This one had to feel really, really good for him. It had to be a little, like, there had to be part of him, yes. I don't know, maybe not. I was going to say it had to be really tough, like holding in his emotions about this win, but it is survival mode for the Texans right now in the AFC. They're 8-4 and you're trying to, you have mathematically put yourself into a conversation where maybe a bye in the first round of the playoffs is back on the radar screen.
I would say that the thing is, because I was raised in the Parcells tree that Bill O'Brien was raised in, He's been a coach long enough now that when something good happens, you have a knee-jerk reaction to be like, nope, this is bad. And when something bad happens, the Parcells tree doesn't do as good a job of this. But ideally, like, when something bad happens, you're like, all right, nope, this is good. We're going to move on, be forward. And you're always trying to balance out and stay even-keeled. I guarantee you that win caused Bill O'Brien some level of stress because of any guilt he felt about feeling good about it. He would say immediately afterwards, all right, I'm feeling too good. I'm not going to get caught up in this moment. I got to immediately turn the page and be on to Denver. And he actually, that's what he told his dad.
That was a really funny story on the press conference, how he talked to his...
So it's almost like, yeah, he really enjoyed that win. But by actually enjoying the win,
yeah,
he has this knee-jerk response because he's raised in the Parcells tree not to enjoy it too much.
What a miserable existence
probably, feel kind of guilty about feeling good about
jubilation.
So like, he can't even enjoy Deshaun Watson giving him the game ball. He knows, even though intellectually I'm sure he knows it's a good moment and everything, there's a part of him it's like, this is just how they set you up to fail. this is exactly, don't taste that poison apple. We gotta just keep moving forward.
That's a really good analogy. So I got to thinking, it may sound like a crazy question, but the way that New England kind of is looked in that game, the way that Kansas City is sort of set up and maybe kind of getting their game back a little bit with Mahomes getting healthy. Which win to you is now, in retrospect, more impressive? Going on the road in week 6 to Kansas City and winning that game, or the win on Sunday night against the Patriots?
I think that it's hard, and I've been thinking about this since last night, because I think both the Chiefs and the Patriots are more flawed than they were last year. Mm-hmm. They're not necessarily – they're not as big a trophy winning against either of those teams. And I don't mean to diminish the, like, I'm still very excited that they beat them. Don't get me wrong. But I think that the Chiefs game, just because it was on the road, and I don't know. I think the Chiefs are more dangerous in the playoffs right now in my mind. I just, because of the offense.
Okay.
And I think because of Pat Mahomes.
That's interesting. The team that's won 2 of the last 3 Super Bowls and been to the other one, has represented the AFC in the last 3 Super Bowls, is the less dangerous team right now.
It's hard. You know what it is? It feels like right now with the Patriots, it's almost like I'm in a college football playoff committee, and I'm trying to think, all right, well, they've had an easy schedule. They've lost 2 of the quality opponents they've played.
Are they Baylor?
Are they actually, right? Like, what do I make of them? How good are they actually? And am I going to use previous years to judge them?
Yeah.
And this is the same thing with the Patriots.
And actually,
last
a better
year.
Analogy, maybe, are they Clemson? Because Clemson's
right.
Won 2 of the last 3,
but
they've played
a horrible
schedule.
I thought about that, but Clemson, like, if they had some losses that I could look at this year or something, that would be different.
Yeah.
Like, if
Clemson, they're just destroying
if
everybody.
If Clemson had played Georgia and Georgia had beat the crap out of Clemson,
yeah,
right? So if Clemson was undefeated, or if they had 1 loss and it was all easy, quote-unquote easy wins, but then they got the crap beat out of them by Georgia.
Yep.
What do I think of them then?
That's right.
That's what the Patriots are right now. Do I go back to Dabo Swinney's record? And I think you do. You do in college football.
Sure.
And you give them a little credit for that. The Patriots last year, at the beginning of the playoffs, Sean, I can remember, it was the guy off, Andrew Filippone does a weekend show.
Pittsburgh guy.
On CBS Sports Radio. And
yeah,
I remember listening before one of the wild card games to Filippone, who I like a lot and who I respect a lot, getting into this huge blowout argument with one of his listeners, because Filippone was saying, look, if you think the Patriots are going to win the Super Bowl, you're crazy. That's how people felt about the Patriots last year going to the playoffs. And they just, they figure out a way to get it done. So that's where I don't, the Patriots lose at least one stinker of a game every year in the playoff or in the regular season, and then still go on and win the Super Bowl. But as far as regular season goes, yeah, I'm more impressed by the Kansas City wins.
Kansas City, yeah. Mine is New England. I'll tell you why when we come back. And but one thing both of those wins have in common that we'll discuss as well. I'm already on Amy's bad side today. I forgot to. She addressed all of our wedding invitations last night.
Oh, I got your wedding invitation yesterday.
No, you got our Christmas card yesterday.
Whoops. All right. I didn't open it. Darn it. Thought I got your wedding invitation. I also got an e-card for Thanksgiving that I just opened
you
yesterday
did?
For my stepfather too. Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
So that's how I operate. I got a card in the mail from you and Amy, and I figured that it was your wedding invitation.
No, that was our Christmas card.
Tell Amy I haven't gotten my wedding invitation yet, and
well,
I'm getting
good,
nervous.
Because I was supposed to grab them on the way out and mail them, and they were sitting on the counter for her as she was leaving the house today.
I think there's one thing that sometimes women don't understand is that these seemingly simple tasks for us as men, look, let me get extremely sexist here. Yeah. Our minds are more engaged with, hey, we got to go out and kill a saber-toothed tiger this morning. Yeah. That's what I'm focused
on.
These little piddly tasks, we can't be bothered with these kinds of things. So sometimes they might say, like, hey, how come you didn't, you've had 2 weeks to mail those wedding invitations. Are you going to claim you haven't had time to do it? And yes, I would say I haven't been able to squander my mental energy for something like that.
I mean, granted, all she's asking me to do is grab a bag full of envelopes and dump them into a mailbox.
Yeah, this is the problem, though, is that's going to take your energy away from the hunt.
Yeah.
From the hunt.
The hunt of hot takes on trick plays. Yeah, you're right. Thank you, Seth.
I just gave you an assignment. You have to go watch LA Confidential this afternoon so you understand my reference from 6:03 a.m.
It's
you
true.
Can't be bothered with mailing invitations.
I've got enough on my plate with mailing these invitations. Well,
it's the hunt. A younger, leaner Russell Crowe. That's what you got to be doing.
This is a good pep talk that you're giving me right here. Yeah, no, she just texted me. She's like, is this you subconsciously saying you don't want to get married? With a smiley, crying emoji afterwards. She's not serious, but at any rate. The other thing is, anytime something is left for me, like literally there's a tangible item left for me to go do something with, it's harder for me in this job because I don't know how you operate, but I tend to operate at 4 or 4:30 in the morning with the lights still turned way down in the house. I don't like turning all the lights on.
Yeah.
I like operating like in my...
It's like you're trying to seduce yourself into the day.
A little bit. And by the time I'm leaving, I'm in love with myself.
I look pretty damn good in this lighting.
That's right. But I don't like turning on a lot of lights. And so I was... this morning, I'm doing everything. You know, like when I'm in the bathroom getting ready, showering and getting ready and stuff, I just turn the closet light on to give me just enough light in the bathroom to where I'm not just hitting the face with light. It helps me ease into waking up for the day. In the main part of our house, everything is lit to our Christmas tree right now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very dim in there. So, Amy, if you're listening, I didn't see the invitations because you know I like to operate under dim light.
Right. Yeah. So they'll be mailed out.
Yeah. Well, they will
today,
because she
like
mailed
11,
them.
11:38. Oh, she did it.
So finally,
I'll get my invitation.
Well, you just get through your Christmas card first. You eat what's on your plate, pal.
This has been a stressful 5 minutes where I realized I didn't have your wedding invitation yet.
It's okay.
Or I thought I had it in hand.
You're fine. Okay. You're fine.
I'm going to go home and yell at Brandy for not opening it.
By the way, we talked in the previous segment, more impressive win, the Kansas City win in week six on the road, or the Patriot win. You said Kansas City. I say New England, Seth, just because it's the hex that this team has had on the Texans, what the Patriots have sort of represented to the Bill O'Brien Texans, where other than his first year here, they've played every year. They've beaten the Texans up until Sunday night in every different variety of way that you could possibly think of to beat a team. They've blown them out. They've blown them out in the playoffs. They've blown them out with a rookie quarterback making their first start. They beat them in a close game.
Yeah.
They beat them in sort of what looked like a close game, but not really. They beat them in Houston. They beat them in New England. Just because of what, and obviously the relationship with O'Brien and Belichick, the personal relationship between the two. I think the Kansas City team, especially in Kansas City, is probably a better team, but I think for what it represents, the monkey on the back that the Patriots were, I think it's, for me, it's the Patriots. But they're both great wins, and I think the thing they have in common is that I think both of those games were, I think the final score is misleading in both of those games. I think they beat both of those teams. If you were to watch the game and not pay attention to the scoreboard, you just watch play to play, you watch the two teams go against each other and just ignore the scoreboard for a second, I think you come away going, man, the Texans are a much better team than this team that they're playing tonight.
And the one thing that's holding me back is I don't know how much of a factor the flu was. I just, you know, who had the flu last week? The Seahawks. Seahawks had a horrible flu outbreak on their team. A bunch of guys that were playing last night were practicing in flu masks during the surgical masks during practice. So obviously, it didn't affect them to the point where they couldn't win on the road versus Minnesota on Monday night. But I don't know how much of a factor that was. Now Kansas City was banged up too. Look, the Texans are banged up. Everybody's damn banged up. It's the NFL season.
Yeah.
But that holds me back a little bit. And the other is, and one of the listeners had texted in and said, "Seth, you are what your record says you are." I'm going to tell you something about that. Look, Bill Parcells, brilliant football coach, obviously, one of the best who ever lived.
Sure.
That's a dumb theory. It's stupid, and it's just something that sounds good when you say it. Everybody knows in the NFL especially you aren't what your record says you are. I was on a team that was 14-2. We weren't the best team in the league that year. We had a ridiculously easy schedule. So the Patriots having only lost two games, that's great. That's awesome. They had a ridiculously easy schedule the first half of the season. The two good quarterbacks that they faced since Ben Roethlisberger in week one have kind of beat the pants off of them. Mm-hmm. You know, as good as that Patriots defense has been versus mediocre quarterbacks, they haven't been very good at all against Deshaun Watson and Lamar Jackson. So I don't know exactly how good the Patriots are, how well-rounded they are. I know that they've got Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, and last year that was enough, that defense also.
Yeah.
So I just, the Kansas City Chiefs scare me in more ways than the New England Patriots do.
Right now, the Kansas City Chiefs would have to come here to play, and if it were the postseason, yeah, and you would have to go to New England to play that game. I would be more scared of going to New England, obviously, than playing Kansas City here. And maybe that's a better argument, you know, just which one scares you, especially if you feel like Kansas City is the better football team, which one scares you more?
There's the rematch factor, though, too. And if it's who makes me more nervous in a rematch, it's Bill Belichick.
For sure.
Bill Belichick and his crusty old self and how angry he was after that loss.
Yeah.
And the fact that his subconscious is going to be working on ways to beat the Texans and everything he learned in the first matchup. Yeah, I'd be more nervous about that in the rematch.
All right, there was a the play that provided the points that ended up being the winning margin in the game was a really cool trick play. Let's relive the magic courtesy of Mark Vandermeer.
Deshaun hands off to Johnson, now to Hop right side, who flips the ball to Watson, diving for the pylon, and he's got it. Razzle dazzle, touchdown Houston.
All right, so that was the play, the Watson handoff to Duke Johnson, quick handoff to Hopkins, and then it was looked like an option pitch. It wound up technically being a touchdown pass because it was a forward lateral. Hop was behind the line, so it was all good. Bill O'Brien, in speaking to the media yesterday, I thought this was interesting, went through sort of his philosophy on when and how to utilize gadget plays.
I think any gadget play, this is just my opinion, is all about timing. You know, it's all about timing. It's not necessarily always where the ball is. It's more about, like, okay, how is the rhythm of this drive going? And can we smoothly just call this play and get this play run? And I thought that the timing was right for that call. So that's really what it was about. I think gadget plays are about that. You know, if you feel like you're really trying to force a gadget play, which I've been at fault to do that before, then you probably should not call that play. But if you feel like you're in a pretty good flow with the offense, you know, moving the ball down the field or wherever the ball might be, you know, I think you can call it.
Thought that was a nice little low-key admission of a flaw that maybe O'Brien has kind of smoothed off or realized a little bit. The part there where he says, "I've been guilty of forcing gadget plays before." I think people immediately think of the Wattcat.
Watt fork.
The Watt fork.
I like Watt fork better than Wattcat.
That's a good one. Yeah, we're in the Kansas City playoff game. The Texans were able to, there's a long Alfred Blue run that took the ball down into, I think, in goal-to-go territory, or certainly into the red zone in that game. And once they got into goal-to-go situation, Bill O'Brien trotted out and injured J.J. Watt at tailback with Vince Wilfork at fullback, and disaster ensued. And Watt wound up leaving the game later on with a help off the field injury, you know, basically his core was torn from his pelvis.
And what you learned later on, too, was that Watt was already injured going into that game.
Yeah.
That was one of the other things. And when you watch that play with that in mind, as Watt's trying to kind of shuffle left and right and back and forth,
yes,
you just, everything about that was probably poorly conceived. Everything felt wrong about that play.
Yeah.
Just for multiple reasons. And I think what O'Brien, it's interesting, is when he said sometimes it's a matter of knowing within the rhythm and whatnot when to do it. I wonder how much of that comes down to, hey, is that play Bill O'Brien's baby or is it somebody else's baby? Because sometimes when something's your own baby, you want to show that baby off to the world, right? Yes. You wanna send Facebook photos out every single day, even though people are sick of seeing your baby. Cute as it is, it's adorable, the little thing. I don't want to see it.
The little wildcat.
I don't want to see it four times a day, right? So I think that's a, there. As he's talking about it, I was kind of thinking, like, that's kind of the argument for having both a coach and a GM, too, isn't it? That sometimes what the coach wants is sometimes the GM has to say, hey,
checks right, and balances.
Back up a little bit. Yeah. So far, right this moment, I feel pretty good about the GM committee.
I do, too.
You always have to be a little bit nervous. All right. But you don't want the coach to have too much say if he doesn't also have the wisdom of knowing when to hold off and when to back off. So I think there's something about maybe the fact that that was Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins' baby, that Bill O'Brien there gets to figure out, all right, well, we're going to use this when it's appropriate. I'm excited to do it, and we'll do it now. It's also, this is the other thing. It's the appropriate time to use it when it worked out. That's the post hoc reasoning that always happens, because Bill Cowher was brilliant at using fake plays, trick plays, and every single damn time it worked, oh my, this is what makes the Steelers, this is what makes them so innovative and so fresh. Every time it didn't work out, I can't believe Bill Cowher called it in that moment.
Yeah.
What a moron. Yeah.
What did you think about the degree of difficulty of that particular play that they ran?
I frankly, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to be honest and totally, I'm not going to let the outcome. I don't think that was a good time to call that play. You know why I know that? Because Deshaun Watson said that wasn't the right time to call that play. He said that he was supposed to check out of that in that situation.
That's right, he did say that.
Seth, you're speculating there, aren't you? Like, no, Deshaun said that that's not when they should have called that play.
There's a lot of, boy, that play, I mean, it was a fun play to watch, and obviously it worked, so it was a fun play to experience.
Yeah.
But you go back and rewatch that play, forget about the part where Hopkins pitches it to Watson.
Yeah.
Forget about the part that Hopkins is in the open field getting submarined by some linebacker. Hopkins did a somersault because he got hit low on that play. That was a little nerve-wracking. The precision with which the triple handoff exchange had to happen with Watson handing it to Duke Johnson, who, by the way, had DeAndre Carter in motion in front of him.
Right, a little bit of penetration there.
And
could
that thing,
have been devastating.
It was like, bang, bang, the handoff from Duke to Hop. You know, like, Watson, Duke, Hop, like, boom, 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 all within, like, less than a second.
Right.
Although, so the timing of it was impeccable. Mm-hmm. And so it worked. It was cool. It needs a cool name.
Oh.
You know, like the Philly Special. You know, like, that was a play that people associate with the Super Bowl.
None of them said what the name of the play was, did they?
I don't know that it has a cool name.
I haven't heard in the audio. Give us 713-572-4610. Text in a suggestion.
Text in some names. I'm submitting mine right now. The Triple D's. Duke, Deshaun, DeAndre.
I like that.
Yeah, and it's got a kind of a body, double entendre.
Yeah, the Triple D. Okay. I'm just thinking of the...
You take your time to think about it.
Yeah.
See what you can come up with. But I'm sure the texters will come up. 713-572-4610. O'Brien actually credits Deshaun Watson, and he mentions A.J. McCarron, too, in the design of the play.
I mean, I said last night, like, I started this, I guess, but now Watson's taking credit for it. So we'll give him credit for him and McCarron, right? They said that they came up with it? Yeah. No, we all kidding aside, we collaborate all the time with these guys. I think that, you know, especially with in the quarterback room, you know, Deshaun, he has a really excellent football mind. So he sees things, and he's done things in the past, whether it was here, now that he has a lot of snaps here, or even at Clemson, that he'll say, hey, look, you know, with this motion or this look, we kind of did this. Would you ever think about doing that? And we map it out on the board, and we talk about it. So there's a lot, and then AJ's got a lot of experience in a lot of different offenses, whether it was Alabama, Cincinnati, Oakland, you know, in here, so he has a lot of – AJ's really good during a game, too. AJ does a good job during a game, and so there's a lot of collaboration with Timmy and Carl, and then when I'm in there.
That's O'Brien talking about the design of the play. We're getting the name – the text line's being flooded with names for this play.
We've got a creative listenership.
Yeah, we do. We got the H-Town Shuffle.
Okay.
The Texans Slide. The quadruple D's. I already put triple D's.
Where's the fourth D that we're missing?
I don't know. Okay. I'm going to ask a 786 guy to send it. The Hop Potato. That's not bad.
That's a good dad one.
The Patriot Penetration.
That's the one I like.
the Texans Two-Step.
Yeah.
The Boot Scoot and Boogie.
Okay. I'm not so sure I like that one.
The...
Who was the Boot Scoot and Boogie? That was
Brooks and Dunn.
That was Brooks and Dunn. Yeah, all right. What was Billy Ray Cyrus's big
hit? That was Achy Breaky Heart.
Oh, gosh. How about them?
Can tell my mom.
Dude, imagine 30 years ago if somebody told you Billy Ray Cyrus was still going to be in your life.
The form of a daughter.
Yeah, not just in this century, but like 2019,
right?
He's still relevant because of his daughter and him, like his role in the movie. Yeah.
DeSandre Watkinson.
We can't use that one because at least three commentators have probably called one of those guys that name over.
I feel like Kenny Albert calls each of them that at some point during all these.
Remember,
games.
I did it last week. I was on TV early in the morning, and my brain wasn't working yet. And I think I did the old. Deshaun Watkins or something. Yeah.
Live TV. And you can't even edit that stuff out.
Yeah.
All right. Keep sending them in. 713-572-4610. We need a nickname for the Texans trick play. You can win a 4-pack of tickets to attend Sugarland Holiday Lights at Constellation Field. Pretty cool holiday thing this time of year.
The annexation of Puerto Rico.
Yeah, I saw that one.
I don't even know what that means.
I don't either.
I'm afraid I just slurred somebody.
I figured I'd bounce that one off of you during the break. You just went ahead.
I'd like to issue my apology right now.
I don't know why.
Inadvertently and completely. I did not mean to slander or insult the people of Puerto Rico.
I did laugh when I saw it. But like, we better just, I better double check on this one.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.